Wall Street Journal had it recently that leading Democratic presidential contenders Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have ratcheted up their anti-trade, anti-corporate rhetoric. The Washington Post took Obama to task in an editorial for exaggerating job losses due to trade pacts, sniffing that such ideas were, quote, not worthy of a candidate whose past speeches and writings demonstrate that he understands the benefits of free trade, close quote. But in reporting on the candidates and trade issues, the remarkable thing is not so much Obama or Clinton's criticism of corporate-driven trade policy as corporate media's uncritical, at times near hysterical, defense of it. What misinformation still sets the stage for this country's global trade debate, and how could journalists redirect the conversation? Joining us now to talk about this is Lori Wallach, director of Global Trade Watch at Public Citizen. Welcome to Counterspin, Lori Wallach.
Thank you very much.
Well, first of all, that's kind of a simple question. Isn't it just a little late in the game for outlets like the Wall Street Journal to refer to arguments that are critical of existing trade pacts like NAFTA as being anti-trade arguments? It seems an indication of just kind of the crudity of the whole conversation.
The data is in. We've had one model of trade and globalization implemented under agreements such as the World Trade Organization, or NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. We've had 15 years to see how that would work. And the data's come in showing the United States has lost net 3 million of its manufacturing jobs in that 15-year period. And for the first time in our country's modern history, less than 10% of the population is employed in manufacturing. Why does that matter for all of us? Because the data also show that when you change out higher-paid manufacturing jobs with lower-paid service sector jobs, wages economy-wide are pushed down. So the government data show, in real terms, U.S. median wages are at about 1972 levels, even though worker productivity has doubled. Now think tanks that supported NAFTA and WTO are writing papers admitting that a significant contribution to that wage suppression is what they call labor arbitrage, having U.S. workers directly competing with workers who make a dollar a day. Why? Not through an act of God, but because agreements like NAFTA and WTO included foreign investor rules that directly incentivized offshoring, relocation of production from the U.S. to low-wage countries, by removing most of the risks normally associated with businesses going to a developing country. Mm-hmm. NAFTA, WTO, they provide guaranteed minimum standards of treatment. They forbid developing countries from applying the kind of policies they used to foreign investors. Things like you have to use a certain percentage of domestic content, or you have to transfer technology to us. And they require that foreign companies operating in a place like China now get all the subsidies the domestic companies get. So all those huge energy subsidies. Fully 60% of the exports of China come from multinational corporations that have moved there for production. Mm-hmm. Those incentives in those agreements have had these outcomes, and the American public has had it. And in fact, for these candidates simply to implement their domestic policy goals, creating jobs, tackling income inequality, dealing with health care crisis and the climate change crisis will require changes to these agreements.
Well, in light of that data and that reality, I wonder what you make of the kind of media coverage that takes the tone that people are sort of, that it's a belief that NAFTA has affected jobs. The Washington Post said that Hillary Clinton was distancing herself from NAFTA, quote, which is unpopular among workers in manufacturing who believe the deal has contributed to the movement of jobs overseas, close quote. What do you make of that kind of psychologizing of what, as you've just indicated, is just a hard reality?
Well, as a recovering trade attorney who's up to her ears in all the government data that proves that these agreements have had these effects, it's infuriating, actually. The data is very clear, and the only good news is a lot of politicians who are having to come face-to-face with Americans who've lived the experience are actually starting to, by political necessity, take steps to change the current policies regardless of what the elite media are saying to try and convince them otherwise. But there's still a lot of work to do. So, for instance, Senators Obama and Clinton, they have been escalating their rhetoric against NAFTA since the Iowa primary. And in a way, it's excellent that they have felt the need to respond to the public's anxiety that they're facing all across the country. The problem is, to date, they really haven't put forward proposals about what they're going to do. So they're sort of feeling our pain, but they've only talked about adding labor and environmental standards to NAFTA, mainly in public. And though important, and in part of building in the long term a social contract for workers in those countries, that could take 100 years like it did in our country. The things that have to be done, which reflect not just NAFTA, but the World Trade Organization, China trade, those things such as removing the investment rules in these so-called trade agreements that directly promote offshoring, removing the ban on local preferences and Buy America rules in all of these trade agreements, NAFTA, WTO, that would totally gut the candidates' proposals for green jobs or for creating good jobs by rebuilding the U.S. infrastructure. That is what needs to be addressed, and the candidates, just to succeed at what they claim are their own priorities, are going to have to deal with this stuff.
Well, is it putting those questions to them specifically? Is it that? And what else do you think reporters might do differently as we go forward, given that this it looks like this is going to stay an issue in the election, to improve or uplift, if you will, the quality of the coverage around trade?
Well, certainly asking some of those specific questions, and we put out an advisory about a week ago that listed questions the candidates probably don't want to hear, but will save them from not being able to, in the future, implement their policy goals. And those questions, which get to the actual changing the terms of globalization by changing the rules questions, the candidates need to address, but also there's now enormous amounts of data. You can go to our website, tradewatch.org, the Economic Policy Institute, the Center for Economic Policy and Research, that take the government data, have footnotes until you could choke, proving that actually these outcomes have occurred, and then showing how they are specifically connected to the agreements. And this information might help remedy, cure the psychologizing that you see in a lot of the mainstream media that makes it seem like NAFTA is some boogeyman that American workers are imagining is under their bed, as compared to these are specific choices, interests that wanted to pursue certain strategies for their maximizing of profits, got their protections to help them offshore, put in specific instruments called NAFTA, WTO, that deliver a specific version of globalization. It got test run for over a decade. The results are in. It ain't working. And the good news, there are some very specific things you could do, were you to be president, to change those agreements to get different outcomes.
I'd like to thank you very much. We've been speaking with Lori Wallach, director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Find them on the web at tradewatch.org. Thanks for joining us today on Counterspin.
Thank